Well, thank you all so much. The music is beautiful. The sanctuary and the lobby is beautiful. To those of you who helped decorate for Christmas, thank you for that. I wanted to mention one more thing that I failed to mention during our prayer time is that our youth and college students this summer went to Alaska and worked with a ministry called Grace Works, and in their area they had an earthquake this week, and so Papa John, our youth minister, has been trying to reach out to them and kind of make sure they're all okay and see if there's anything they can need, but please be in prayer for them in Alaska and for all those who are suffering because of the earthquake. All right, well, I want to invite you to the Gospel of John this morning. John, New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and then John. And so as you're finding John, you know, as a kid, one of my favorite Christmas traditions was Christmas music. My family was the kind of family that got out the Christmas CDs. Remember those? Some of you still have CDs, other of you, it's all digital now, but we got out the Christmas CDs and played them on loop from the day after Thanksgiving to January 1st, and just always loved Christmas music. And as a kid, I just figured that everyone loved Christmas music, right? But as I got older, I have found out that this isn't the case, that some people less than love Christmas music, is what I'm going to say. And so I always found that quite astonishing since my family loved it so much. So here's what I want to do, just to have a little fun and break the ice this morning. I want to take a poll by a show of hands. But before I do, I need you to promise me two things. One, I want you to be honest. And two, you will not judge anyone who answers differently than you, okay? This is church. We're all going to love each other no matter what, right? But I just want to ask in just a moment, raise your hand first if you just love Christmas music. Raise your hand. Oh, yeah, I figured most of the room would. These are the people who wake up to Mariah Carey in the morning and go to sleep to Amy Grant from the day after Thanksgiving to January 1st. I get it. Okay. Now, remember, no judgment. We're all going to love one another. Is there anyone here? And let me preface it by this. I had a season in my life, quite a few years, where I boycotted Christmas music, right? It was during my teen years where, you know, it was just cool to boycott everything, right? If it wasn't indie, it wasn't cool enough, right? So, but some of us, we just don't care for Christmas music that much. Anyone just like, yeah, there we go. These are the people that they only like it when You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch comes on. They watch the Ebenezer Scrooge story up until the part his heart changes, and then they just turn it off, right? Very good. Well, thanks for letting me have a little fun with you guys. I am so excited and want to be hopefully one of the first to tell you Merry Christmas. I am excited about the Christmas season, especially this year with us as a church. And the deal is that Robin and I will be here this Sunday and then two more Sundays, and then we are taking our first official vacation. And so the last two Sundays of December, we will not be with you. Brother Bubba Courtney will be here to preach to you those two Sundays. And so with these three Sundays I have left, I want to do a Christmas series from the Gospel of John chapter 1. We'll be in John chapter 1 all 3 weeks. And this series I'm calling Light and Life. Light and life. And I know some of you type A people are like, well, what about Ephesians? We were right in the middle. You can't leave us hanging. Well, I appreciate that. And I promise we're going to pick right back up where we left off first Sunday in January, back in Ephesians, and finish the book. So one of my favorite Christmas songs, I would have to say of all time, is Hark the Herald Angels Sing. And I guess that's not too surprising for a pastor to be his favorite song, given that there are so many gospel-centered phrases like peace on earth and mercy mild, God and sinners reconciled, and pleased as man with men to dwell, Jesus our Emmanuel. Yet the line from that Christmas song that I really want us to focus on through these next three sermons is light and life to all he brings. That phrase, you know, comes directly out of John chapter 1, where John explains to us who Jesus is and what he came to do. So at the beginning of the Christmas season, we are going to explore what it means that Jesus has come and brought life, light and life. Light and life. And so we will start in John chapter 1, verse 1, and this will just be our congregational reading this morning. So will you read these five verses with me aloud? In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. What's the first thing that comes to your mind when you hear the word darkness? For some of us, we immediately think of physical darkness. Maybe you've gone into a room with no lights on, no windows, and you've closed the door, and you've been in a physical darkness where you can't even see your hand in front of your face. Others of us, when we hear the word darkness, we immediately think of moral darkness. We think of the kind of sinful decisions that people make that divide people and destroy people and that cause division and destruction. Maybe you think of the darkness of death or war. You think of dark days in our nation's history like 9/11. That's all moral darkness. Some of us immediately think of emotional darkness. We'll just move right ahead. Some of us think of emotional darkness. You think about something like depression or loneliness or grief, and you would describe it as a dark time in your life. No matter the first thing you think about when you think about the word darkness, it has this concept of lostness or confusion or not knowing and perceiving rightly. And I think about the concept of darkness and light every year at Christmas time because you've probably heard those stories of countries at war who choose to do a Christmas truce. They're fighting with one another, but they decide on Christmas Day to stop fighting and they celebrate Christmas together. And then the next day, they go back to killing one another, if you've ever heard any of those kind of stories. Or I think about in our own nation, when we've had dark times, yet no matter what, December still came, and people still decorate, and we still sing songs of peace on earth and goodwill to men. Because you see, even in the midst of darkness, we are all drawn toward light and life and hope and peace. And John begins his gospel by showing us where that all comes from. And so we just looked at the first five verses. And the first point I want us to think through today is that Jesus is the source of light and life. Jesus is the source of light and life. This is what John's telling us. And I love John's writing because he's very conceptual and thematic. What I mean is, if Luke would have written the same thing John just wrote, Luke's very type A, he was a researcher, and so he probably would have written, Jesus has always existed with God, and he made everything, and then he came to earth to save sinners. Good stuff, but just very straightforward, right? But John, he's one of those really artistic types. I imagine John to be one of those guys who likes poetry and drinks complicated coffee drinks and goes to art galleries and listens to indie folk music. You know the type. So he doesn't just write down the facts like a detective. He paints us a picture with concepts and with themes. That's what John does. And the first concept he gives us is this concept of the Word. Those who are familiar with their Bible, when you read the first three words of John 1:1, what do you think? In the beginning. What does that remind you of? Genesis, right? Yeah, the first verse in our whole Bible, Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So John plays on that, and he writes, in the beginning. And where we would expect him to say God, instead, he says, in the beginning was the Word. Well, we already know that in the beginning, before creation, there was only God. So whatever John means by the Word, he's connecting the idea of the Word, the title of the Word, to God himself. But then he tells us that the Word was with God. So, it seems that the Word was not God, but that he was with God in the beginning before creation. But no, Then John says, no, the Word was God. Well, which one is it, John? Was the Word with God or was the Word God? And John answers, yes, it's both. The Word has always been with God, and the Word has always been God. And when you get down to verse 14 and 17, John explicitly tells us that the Word is the Son of God, Jesus Christ. So what is important to note is even though we celebrate this time of year when Jesus Christ came into human history as a baby, the Son of God has always been God and has always been with God the Father. Jesus has always been God, just as God the Father has always been God, and God the Holy Spirit has always been God. It's the mystery and the beauty of the Trinity. And in the event of Christmas, Jesus, who has always been God, came to earth as a baby. Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons call themselves Christians, yet they reject that Jesus was actually God. And they would say that the Bible never claims that Jesus is God. Yet it's actually extremely clear in places right here. And that's why they argue for even a different translation of the Bible that changes these verses right here. Because they feel that they have to in order to show that Jesus is not God. But there's no getting around it from the Scriptures. Let's be clear. Jesus is fully God. Jesus is the Word. So why does John call Jesus the Word? I mean, he could have called him Jesus. He could have called him the Son of God. Yet he chooses to call him the Word. And so I want us to think, why does he call him the Word? And how does that connect to Jesus bringing light and life? Well, for starters, he tells us why he calls Jesus the Word in verse 3. When he says in verse 3, all things were made through him, and without him was not anything made that was made. Remember, in Genesis 1, God created all things with his words. It's when he said, let there be light, that light was created. It's when he said, let there be living creatures, that animals were created. And what John is doing is he's tying God's spoken words of creation to God's Son, Jesus. Because he's saying that Jesus is God and that Jesus created all things. And you know, it's really easy for us a lot of times to live life with a sacred and secular divide. And how that plays out is we think that God cares about things like church and reading the Bible and prayer, but we're not sure God is intimately involved in things like our jobs and our hobbies or our finances. Those are secular things. You see, we tend to separate God's stuff and other stuff. Yet when you understand that Jesus, the Son of God, who was born as a baby at Christmas, in the beginning created all things, then there's absolutely no way to understand the purpose and meaning of anything in your life apart from Jesus. There's no way to truly understand anything about your job or the purpose of your family or even the purpose of your free time or your possessions or even your suffering or your hardships without Jesus, because it all originates with Jesus. You cannot understand anything apart from Jesus. I've heard it said this way: there is not one square inch of the entire universe that Jesus does not declare mine. It is all from Jesus and through Jesus, and it goes back to Jesus. Do not think you can live your life or even take your very next breath apart from Jesus. He's the one enabling you to even breathe, even if you are neglecting or rejecting him right now. Which begins to answer our question of what does it mean that Jesus, the Word, brings life? Verse 4, it says, in him was life, and the life was the light of men. Because you see, Jesus is the very source of all life. Think about that. Jesus is the very source of all life. Even when the world tries to explain how everything got here and how the creation was put here apart from God and apart from a deity, they come up with all these theories about how we can be here without a higher being, without God, yet they can never answer this question. Even if it were somehow possible that the machines of our living bodies and living animals and living plants all got here by chance, who turned all those machines on? What makes these complex systems live and move and breathe? And a secularist would say, well, I don't know. But they'd also say, no one does. But the Bible tells us clearly, in Jesus, we live and move and have our being. You see, you cannot escape Jesus, nor would you want to. He is the source of your very life. Yet as we continue to read in the Gospel of John, it becomes crystal clear that Jesus is not only the source of our physical life and all physical life, he is the source of all spiritual life as well. Which is really important to understand, because when our first parents back in the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve, chose to sin against God, they were separated from God and they were put outside of the garden because God was holy and God could not even be in the presence of sin. And so God told them that now they would die. You see, it's not the great mystery to wonder at the fact that our souls are dead apart from God. That's what God tells us. Our souls are dead apart from him because our sin separates us from our very life. But the great mystery is God's great mercy that he sustains our physical lives for a time, even when we are separated from him spiritually because of our sin. You see, in sin, we are all spiritually dead and separated from the very source of spiritual life. Yet God, in his mercy, continues to give life to our physical bodies, although our spirit, our souls are dead. And when we live in the world without hope and without God and without the light of God in the world, it's like we're always walking around in pitch darkness, in this big room, and we're just clutching to anything that we can to try to explain the meaning and the purpose of our existence. That's the reason we become so selfish and are drawn so strongly to things that will never truly satisfy us. Some people give their whole lives and sacrifice everything else for their jobs in order to gain money and stuff that will mean nothing to them the day after they die. Some give their whole lives to their families. They want to give the best to their families, everything that they never got. Yet when their families, when their kids go to eternity the next day after they die, they can't take any of it with them. Some give their lives over to pleasure and sacrifice themselves for sex or substances, but it always leaves them feeling so empty and lacking any purpose because they're just fumbling around in a dark room trying to find anything to grasp onto. Some give their lives to success and achievements, believing that they can make their lives count or leave a legacy by what they can achieve. But let's be honest, unless you're someone like Billy Graham, your name gets forgotten within, what, two or three generations? A very successful businessman once said, he came to Christ, and he said, you know, I spent my entire life climbing the ladder of success, only to realize at the end the ladder was leaning against the wrong building. It's all because our souls are dead apart from Jesus, who is the very source of our spiritual life. And when we're not connected to him, we're grasping on to just everything to try to find meaning and purpose for our life. Is that where you're at this morning? Are you grasping for all these different things to just try to find meaning and purpose and peace in your life? It only comes through Jesus. And just as in the creation, God created light in order for physical life to flourish, Jesus is the light of the world and the light of men, and his light shines in order that spiritual life can be resurrected in men and can flourish. Jesus is the source of light and life, both physical and spiritual. Can you think about that? That Jesus is sustaining your heart, your lungs, your blood flow, and the complex systems of your brain at this very moment, whether you are mindful of him or not. And while we all naturally walk in darkness due to our sin and rebellion against God, Jesus is the light and life our dead hearts desperately need. And God the Father loved us enough that he did not keep his son to himself. But when he saw us in that place of deadness and darkness apart from God because of our sin, he sent Jesus. And Jesus, the Word, came. And he grew in stature and in favor with God and men. And Jesus, the Word, spoke the words of the kingdom of God and did the works of the kingdom through miracles. And Jesus even entered into our sin and our darkness by taking our sin on himself on the cross. Think about that. The very source of light and life took our sin and our darkness to the point of death. And Jesus died and was buried, yet 3 days later, Jesus rose from death, proving once for all time that he is the source of light and life, but that he loved us enough that he would go through all of our darkness in order for us to have the light and life of Jesus. In his resurrection, Jesus defeated the darkness of death, of Satan, and of our sin. And Jesus' invitation is to anyone and everyone to turn from their sin and their darkness and to turn to Jesus, the very source of light and life. And the only way that you do that, the only thing you have to do in order to do that, is to believe that what Jesus did in his cross and in his resurrection, he did for you. And if you turn to him and believe in him, he will save you. And at that moment, he will take your soul from death to life. And he will give you his life and his light, and he will put the light of love and forgiveness and mercy and grace in your heart. He'll apply all that he is to you. All you have to do is just turn to Jesus and receive what he's offering you. Well, you can't get from anywhere else, because here's the promise. John tells us the promise right here. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. Think about when you turn on a light in a dark room. The darkness has to flee. Yet when a light is shining, there is no darkness that you can turn on to make the light flee. All another object can do is block the light, but it can't keep the light from existing and from shining. Do you believe that Jesus can really give you light and life in your life? Because I know that some of you have experienced a lot of darkness, a lot of confusion, a lot of loss, and a lot of pain. And maybe there's darkness in your family, or darkness due to things that you've seen and experienced, or darkness that came on you that you never asked for, or darkness in your own mind and in your own heart, or darkness due to your sin and bad choices, or darkness due to your losses and your heartache, or darkness due to your addiction to substances, or darkness due to enslaving debt, or darkness due to the lies of Satan that you just keep believing, or darkness due to generational family sins and patterns that you just don't believe you can break. Or maybe it's darkness of poor health and the lack of strength, or darkness due to doubts and confusion or anxiety and fear. Listen, Jesus says to you this morning through his word, listen, I know there's darkness in your life. I experienced your darkness myself on the cross. And my light has shined, and darkness will not overcome it. I am not surprised nor intimidated by your darkness. At Christmas time, you celebrate that Jesus, the very source of light and life, stepped into darkness and took all the darkness on himself so that you can have the hope of light and life. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. His light is going to continue to infiltrate more and more areas of your heart as you give yourself to Him, as you continually turn to Jesus as your source of light and life. He can continue to shine light in new corners of our community and our nation and around the world as we, His church, submit ourselves to Him, the light and life of the world. And there's one more promise. And that promise is that the light and life, Jesus Himself, is going to come again. He came the first time as a baby, but the next time He will not come as a humble baby. He will come as a warrior. And He will drive out the very presence of darkness, and we will live in the light and life of His presence, completely separated from darkness forever, if we are His children, if we receive His gospel and His light and life in this life. Jesus is the source of all light and life, and the destiny of this world and of every human heart is to either live in eternity with Jesus, our source of light and life forever, or to reject Him and live apart from Him forever in darkness and death. Jesus is the source of light and life. Then John goes on in verse 6. Verse 6, look at it with me. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. He came as a witness to bear witness about the light that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but came to bear witness about the light. Number 2, the only other point we're going to look at today. Followers of Jesus give their life to shine His light. Followers of Jesus give their life to shine His light. So John has unpacked for us the Word, the Son of God. He's eternal. He's God. He's the source of all light and life. He brings life and light and conquers darkness. So how would you expect God to get this message of light and life to every person on the planet? Maybe you would expect Him to send angels like He did to the shepherds in that Christmas to display it. Or maybe you would expect, like Paul, that He would just show up, the resurrected Jesus would show up on a road in front of everyone. Maybe He would get on live news and blow up everyone's social media accounts like people do today. But no, He did none of those things. Listen, when God desired to convince the people of the world who Jesus was, He sent a man whose name was John. And John was a man who knew and loved God, and he gave his life to share God with others. He came as a witness. John had experienced God's love and God's plan for his life, and that Jesus was the light of the world. And so he shared that witness to others, and the goal was that others would believe through his witness. Do you realize in the book of Acts, not one person becomes a believer in Jesus without God sending a witness to them? You say, well, what about Paul? He showed up on the Damascus Road. Think about this. The resurrected Jesus showed up to Paul on the Damascus Road and did not share the gospel with him. He sent him to another town, and he sent a man who knew the gospel to come share it with him. An Ethiopian eunuch who was reading the Old Testament and was trying to figure out what it meant. God did not send an angel. He did not tell him in a dream. God sent a man, Philip. From all that was going on in church planting in Jerusalem, he sent him all the way out to this Ethiopian eunuch to witness to Jesus. Imagine this isolated African village in western Tanzania, this video that we just watched a few moments ago. These are people who had absolutely no access to the gospel of Jesus Christ. They were going to be born, live their entire lives, and die apart from even knowing Christ. So what does God do? There was a man who worked for NASA in the United States, sent from God, and he sent him to Western Tanzania to witness to the light and life of Jesus. He himself was not the light, but he came to bear witness about the light. And a village who had lived and died for generations without Christ now has enough believers to have their own church and to share the gospel with others in their village. It's like I said a few weeks back, you see, the life of the nations is only going to come through the death of the church. When the church dies to themselves to live for God's mission. When we're willing to lay down our lives and say yes to whatever God tells us to do. I want you to think for just a minute of someone in your life, and I hope we all have them, someone in your life that you don't believe right now knows Jesus. You don't believe they have a personal relationship with Jesus right now. And I want you to think about that person. And I want you to now imagine that in the future, they know Jesus. They've been saved. And they're sharing Jesus with someone else. And someone asks them, "How did you come to know Jesus?" And they will answer, "There was a man sent from God, whose name was," and insert your name, "whose name was Tommy. There was a woman sent from God whose name was Lauren. There was a man sent from God whose name was Bob. There was a woman sent from God whose name was Catherine. And they came to me and they came and they just shared the light of Jesus with me." They were not the light. They were just as messed up as I am in some ways, right? They sin and they stumble. But they knew that Jesus came to save sinners, and they shared that testimony with me. And as a follower of Jesus, you might hear that and you think, well, sure, he sent John, but he's never going to send me anywhere to witness about the saving power of Jesus to people. And I have to ask you, why not? If the very source of light and life dwells in your heart, the true question is not, why would I go? The true question is, why should I stay? Why shouldn't I go across the street and share Jesus with my neighbor? Why shouldn't I invite my coworker out to coffee and witness to the salvation of Jesus? Why shouldn't I go to the places in our country where the gospel is not as easily accessible? Why shouldn't I quit my job, lay down my plans, and go overseas to places around the world who have no access to Jesus and his saving message? Do you realize that as a follower of Jesus, wherever God has you and wherever he sends you as a witness of his light and life to share that witness with others? Think about this idea of John calling Jesus the Word. Not only does it point to the fact that Jesus created all things, it also points to the fact that Jesus was the very message of God. Jesus is the way that God communicated his salvation to the world, but now Jesus has gone up to heaven and he's left us with his Holy Spirit. So now you have to ask, what is the way that God gets his message of Jesus around the world now? It's us. It's the church. And when Jesus went back to heaven, he left us to continue to spread the word, that message. For Romans tells us, "I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it's the power of God for salvation." The gospel is the spoken message of what Jesus has done to save sinners. Just as God's words were the power of creation in Genesis 1, God's word spoken is the very power to see another soul raised from the dead and saved by God. Do you realize that the very power of God is never further from your lips and your willingness to speak of Jesus and his death and resurrection? And you can do that anywhere, but I want us to focus, since we're focusing on International Missions Week, I want you to think global as well. Of the 7.5 billion people in the world, it's estimated that 2.8 billion of them live in places with very little to no access to the gospel of Jesus Christ. That means that they will never hear the gospel of Jesus from one of their own citizens because there's not any. The only way they will hear the gospel of Jesus is if someone from another place crosses their culture and their language gap in order to get the gospel to them. And they have no eternal hope apart from that happening. They have no eternal hope apart from someone in the church being willing to die to themselves, lay down their lives before Jesus, and say, "Send me, I'll go." You see, Christianity at its core is cross-cultural and missionary. Think about it. Jesus left his home in heaven to cross cultures in order to come and save us. And he says to us, as the Father has sent me to you, now I'm sending you to them. Paul writes it in Romans, and it's so clear. How then will they call on him in whom they have not believed? And how are they to believe in him in whom they have never heard? And how are they to hear without someone preaching? And how are they to preach unless they are sent? As it is written, how beautiful are the feet of those who preach the good news. And then a few verses later, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word of Christ. Have you ever considered the fact that Jesus allowed you to be born where you're born with such access to the gospel so that you could take that gospel to places where there is no present access to the gospel in order to give your life to give others access to Jesus? Have you ever even considered that? High school and college students, do you realize that God has given you his gospel in order for you to get it to those who don't yet know him? Career man and woman, have you ever even considered the fact that God could use your skill and your vocation in places where the gospel is hardly or not yet known in order to give people access to the gospel? Those who are retired, have you ever even considered that Jesus wants you to give this season of your life to be sent on mission with his gospel to the world? Listen, every day you're sent to your job, sent to your college campus, and have you ever considered that God may want to send you to a place in the world who do not right now have much access to him? Listen, Jesus is so clear and explicit about this, but I believe that most of us in America just don't listen. We just don't have an ear for it. When he says things like this in Mark 10, Peter came to Jesus and said, "See, we have left everything and followed you." And Jesus said, "Truly, I say to you, there is no one who has left house or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children or land for my sake and for the gospel, who will not receive 100-fold now in this time houses and brothers and sisters and mothers and children and lands with persecutions, and in the age to come eternal life. But many who are first will be last, and the last first." And listen, to close, I don't want you to think that I'm just up here preaching to you something that I have not considered myself. You know, when I was called to gospel ministry in high school, I just believed I'd be a preacher in America. That's just what I knew of gospel ministry, and so that's what I thought I'd do. Yet as God continued to lead me, he opened up my mind, and he opened up so much for me to see the world and to see the darkness and the lostness of the world and how so many have little to no access. And then he asked Robin and I to go to India, to go as missionaries, and we plan to be there the rest of our lives, to give our lives to India and bring the gospel to a place where it was not. Make no mistake, it was uncomfortable, it was scary, it was hard for our parents to understand, especially because we had their first two grandchildren in tow. But we said, "God, here I am, send me." And we still wake up some days and wonder, why, God, you brought us back. Like, because of a medical reason, we had to come back. But God showed me clearly while we were in Maryland trying to figure out, "Jason, I sent you back because I want you to go. I want you to go to the places where there is such access to the gospel, and I want you to call them out to go. Go to the places where the light and life of Christ needs to get to the nations who have never heard." Would you pray with me? Oh God, I believe that a response to your gospel is also a response to be sent to share your gospel with others. And I pray that you would speak to our minds and our hearts right now, and we would lay our lives before you, God. And say, send me, I'll go. Listen, C.T. Studd was an English missionary to China, and he said this, "Only one life will soon be passed. Only what is done for Christ will last." Make no mistake, when Jesus calls a person, he calls them to take up their cross and follow him. He asked nothing short of your life, and he gave you nothing short of his life. So here's the invitation today. You can look up and you can stand with me. The invitation today is, have you ever seen your life as a blank check and put it before God, and you just say to God, God, here am I. Send me. God, I know I have my own plans for my life. I know I have my own dreams. But Jesus, you're better. And you're worth it. And just like that guy who worked at NASA, he said, my job became my identity, but I had to go before God and I had to say, God, my life is not my job. What I don't need is my job. What I need is Jesus. So I'm going to ask you, will you take this moment with God and say, God, whatever you want me to do, I don't want to be so set in my life plan that I say no to Jesus. I want you to ask God, what does he want you to do to be a part of this Lottie Moon Christmas offering? And maybe he's calling someone out to go. And this is how it works. You have no idea what that means. You have no idea where God's going to take you. But you know God's just saying, he wants me to go. He wants me to give my life to be sent and get the gospel to others and help others do that too. And I don't know why, and I don't know how all that's going to look, and I don't know what the next step is, but I know he's calling me to go. Listen, I want to invite you, if he's doing that in your mind and heart, take a step of faith. I know it's scary, but just take a step of faith and say yes. God, I don't know what it means. I don't know if it'll keep me here in Livingston or send me around the world, but God, here I am. Send me. If God's placing that on your heart, would you come in just a moment? I'd love to pray with you. This church would love to celebrate with you what God's doing in your heart and in your life. And what you're doing in coming is you're just saying yes to God. You're not saying I'm going overseas, or you're not saying any of that. You're just saying, yes, God, send me. I'll go wherever you want me to go. But I'm going to explore the possibility of what it would mean for God to use me in places where Jesus is not yet known. I'm going to give myself to explore that opportunity. And maybe someone's here today and you're like, man, my heart's burdened, but it's for a different reason. It's that I don't even know this Jesus like you do. Who is this one who would give your life to, who gave his life for you? Listen, if God is prompting you, I'd love to pray with you, answer any questions about Jesus. If you're at the place where you know God is saving you in this moment, you're turning from your sin and turning to Jesus, would you come? We'll celebrate with you. You take this moment with the Lord. Wherever he has your heart, you just give it to Jesus and say, Jesus. I think there's one more in this room, and there's some in this room that aren't there yet. You're like, if I was honest, I couldn't come before Jesus today and say, Jesus, send me, I'll go wherever you want me to go. I just don't find myself in that position. Would you just confess that to Jesus and hear him tell you that he loves you and that he saved you not for what you would do for him, but he saved you because he loves you? And you just press into him and his love for you. And you let him lead you today and every day after. And you just see what he does. So this is your time. If you need to come, you come. If you need to kneel at the altar, you kneel at the altar. If you need to stay right where you are, you spend this moment with God.